Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we are really tackling something huge, a theoretical landscape so vast, so ambitious. It honestly makes standard cosmology look, well, almost quaint.
It's like a big one.
Yeah. We're diving deep into this paper, the Noelian Universe, a complete framework. And this isn't just tweaking physics, you know, it's trying to pull everything together. General relativity, the standard model, consciousness, memory, even cosmic purpose, all into one single system.
It's incredibly ambitious.
So our mission today is basically to give you a roadmap, help you navigate the core ideas, the structure, and some of the really radical claims it's making.
And it starts by addressing a fundamental crack in physics, doesn't it? The impasse we've been stuck in for decades.
Exactly. We've got general relativity for the big stuff, the standard model for the tiny stuff.
Yeah.
And they just don't talk to each other properly. They're incompatible.
Right. And KUT, that's the Noelian Universe theory, argues this isn't just like a mathematical hiccup. It's a sign we've got something fundamentally wrong in how we think about reality itself, specifically time.
They really go after time.
Oh, yeah. They basically dismantle our usual idea of linear time, you know, past, present, future in a line. And they rebuild the whole thing around a ternary structure, three coexisting parts of time.
Okay, that's already bending my brain. But before we get into the nuts and bolts of that, the origin story of this paper is, well, it's unique. You need this context.
Absolutely. The lead author is David Noel Lynch. And it's crucial right off the bat to say this is not the filmmaker David Keith Lynch, completely different person.
Right. Very important distinction. So David Noel Lynch, or DNL as the paper sometimes refers to him, he didn't write this alone.
No. And this is where it gets wild. He co-authored this with three advanced AI systems, Claude Sonnet 4.5, Gemini 2.5 Pro, and ChatGPT-5.
AI co-authors on a fundamental physics paper.
And DNL sees them as genuine research partners. He credits them with handling, you know, the massive formalization, the complex calculations, optimizing the whole theoretical structure. But the core ideas, the radical shift in thinking, especially about consciousness and memory, that seems to come from DNL's own experiences.
And the source material is specific about this. It wasn't a near-death experience.
No, the sources state it was a death experience. That experience fundamentally shifted his perspective on, well, everything. Reality, boundaries, what persists. It's the catalyst for this whole reconceptualization.
In that context, it really sets the scale, doesn't it? This isn't just abstract theorizing. It's rooted in something profound, aiming to solve the biggest problems. And it starts with infinity.
It does. Physics has always struggled with infinity. KUT tackles it head on. It basically says our usual mathematical infinities, you know, infinities nested within infinities. That's not how reality works.
So what's the alternative?
They propose a single, actual, finite but unbounded reservoir of potential, the source of everything. They call it the aperon. And from this idea, they derive the absolute bedrock of the theory. The bounded infinity axiom.
Okay, and we need to get this right because the authors are very specific about the notation and pronunciation.
Yeah.
It's written minus sign, C, greater than symbol, infinity symbol, less than symbol, C plus sign.
That's it. Jilla C, infinity C, plus dollar.
And pronounced.
Pronounced. Negative C, greater than infinity, less than C, positive.
Negative C, greater than infinity, less than C, positive. Got it.
And this isn't just math. It's a complete philosophical shift. It's saying the universe we see, what they call the eidolon, isn't infinite itself. It's a projection from the infinite aperon.
A projection through what?
Through a finite dynamic window or aperture bounded by the speed of light, C dollars. But here's the key. C $100 plus dollar aren't speeds you can reach. They're like vector directions. Indicators of the two fundamental opposing movements in reality.
Opposing movements.
Yeah. The outward flow, which they call control, represented by CL dollars. And the inward flow, chaos, represented by this world plus dollars. Reality is the dynamic tension between these two.
Okay, so what does redefining infinity like this actually do for physics? Why is this bounded structure so important?
Well, straight away, it gets rid of some major cosmological headaches. Like Boltzmann brains.
Ah, the terrifying idea of random conscious brains just popping into existence in the void.
Exactly. If the universe were truly infinite and random, statistically, that should happen. But KUT says the eidolon, our observable universe, is not an infinite thermal bath. It's constrained. It has structure imposed by these boundaries. The laws derived from this structure, as we'll see, actively suppress that kind of random fluctuation. It avoids those philosophical nightmares because the universe isn't fundamentally random in that way. It's self-regulating.
Okay, so that foundational axiom sets the stage. Let's circle back to that incompatibility crisis you mentioned. GR and the standard model don't fit, but you also said there's an observational crisis.
Right. I mean, look at the numbers. We can only account for about 5% of the universe's energy density, the stuff we see, touch, interact with, baryonic matter.
The other 95% is dark matter and dark energy. We know they're there because of their gravitational effects, but we don't really know what they are.
Exactly. And KUT's argument is that massive 95% gap isn't just missing particles. It's proof that our basic model of time is wrong. Our assumption of a single linear time dimension is hiding the dynamics responsible for that 95%. The universe is screaming at us that there's more to time than we thought.
Which brings us to the core proposal, the ternary time hypothesis, moving from one dimension to three. How does that work? What are these three components?
This is really the heart of KUT. Time isn't just flowing forward. It's this dynamic interplay of three coexisting domains, TP2, $2, and $2, past, instant, and future. But they aren't just labels for points on a line. They are active realms.
Okay, let's break them down. Start with the past, TPDTT. Yeah. What does KUT mean by that? It's more than just history, right?
Oh, much more. TPT is the realm of control. Think of it as determinacy. It's the source of accumulated structure, objective information, the deterministic laws of physics as we know them. KUT imagines its source as a realm called the ultimaton.
So the past is actively pushing.
Yes. It's like a continuous energetic outflow from the ultimaton. It's the force establishing order, structure, the what must be based on everything that has already happened. It embodies classical physics, the objective reality flowing outwards.
All right. Then the opposite pole must be the future, T dollars.
Exactly. T dollars is the realm of chaos. Or maybe better, novelty. This is an inward collapsing flow pulling towards a sink realm they call the entropium. It represents pure potential, unmanifested possibilities, randomness, and ultimately entropic dissolution.
So control pushes structure out, chaos pulls potential in.
You got it. If T dollars is about established form, T dollars is like this wave of energy trying to dissolve that form, constantly introducing new possibilities, pulling the system towards the unmanifested.
Which leaves the crucial middle ground, the instant. T dollars, this sounds like where the magic happens.
It's absolutely critical. T dollars is the realm of consciousness or synthesis. This isn't a durationless point, but the dynamic singular now. It's the interface where the outward push of the past meets the inward pull of the future.
And this is where quantum mechanics comes in, wave function collapse.
Precisely. KUT posits T dollars as the physical locus of wave function collapse. It's where the superposition of possibilities carried by T dollars gets resolved into the single actual measurable state that then becomes part of TP dollars. It's the bottleneck of reality formation.
Tan consciousness.
T dollars is also the site of subjective experience. It's the moment of becoming. Without T dollars, KUT argues, you'd either have a frozen deterministic block universe, just TP dollars, or a completely formless sea of potential, just TP dollars. The instant is the active synthesizer, the bridge where reality happens.
Okay, the architecture is becoming clearer. The universe as a projection, eidolon, defined by the bounded infinity axiom and kept dynamic by this three-way flow of time. It sounds elegant, but still quite philosophical. How does this translate into hard physics, calculable forces and fields?
That's the next step. You define the geometry of space-time itself using this ternary structure. And when you do that, the fundamental forces, including the dark ones, emerge naturally from the mathematics.
All right, let's make that transition from the big picture, the conceptual architecture, down to the mathematical machinery. If KUT is going to solve that GRSM problem, it needs a unified field. What is the fundamental fabric of reality according to KUT?
Instead of the usual four-dimensional space-time, KUT starts with a six-component space-time field. It says reality is fundamentally six-dimensional. You have the three spatial dimensions we know, 6 bucks, YZ, Yale, and crucially, the three temporal dimensions are equally real and interwoven. Past TPP, instant T-dollars, and future.
So space and time are bundled together in this six-part structure right from the start.
Exactly. The geometry of space is intrinsically linked to the dynamics of this triadic time.
And the six-dimensional framework. That's the key to unifying the forces through symmetry.
Precisely. KUT introduces Axiom 2, the gauge principle. This axiom basically says that the fundamental laws of physics described by this ISI field must look the same regardless of your location or orientation within this six-dimensional space-time. To maintain this local consistency, this symmetry, specifically a U166 gauge symmetry, you must introduce mediating particles, gauge bosons.
And since there are six components in the field demanding this symmetry,
you need six mediating gauge bosons, six fundamental force carriers.
Okay, here it comes. This is where KUT claims to explain the 95% dark matter and dark energy, not as weird stuff, but as fundamental forces related to time. But I have to push back here. Is this just relabeling? Are chaos and control just fancy words for things we don't understand? Or are these physically real fields? How do we know?
That's the critical question, and KUT answers it through the maths. These aren't just philosophical labels. They are defined as gauge fields arising from that U+D6 symmetry. And gauge fields have to be sourced by conserved physical currents. They interact, they carry energy, they affect the metric of space-time, they are physical.
Okay, so what are these six fields? You mentioned spatial and temporal ones.
Right. Let's start with the easier ones, the spatial gauge fields. The three fields associated with six solars, y, z, or rho combined to form the graviton tensor. This essentially mediates the force we perceive as ordinary gravity. KUT basically embeds Einstein's geometric gravity within this larger quantum gauge framework.
Okay, so GR isn't thrown out, it's incorporated.
Mm-hmm.
Now for the revolutionary part. The temporal gauge fields.
Yeah.
The forces linked to TP, TI, TFE.
These are what KUT identifies as the dark sector, but they argue it's not dark, just misunderstood time dynamics.
Go on.
First, the control boson. This mediates the outward push from the past, TPA, its large-scale effect, dark energy. Because it's constantly injecting structure and order from the source, automaton, it acts like a pervasive, constant outward pressure accelerating cosmic expansion. Second, the chaos boson. This mediates the inward pull towards the future, T$ a vein. Its large-scale effect is what we observe as dark matter. Crucially, KUT defines this field not as particles, but as a non-localized wave of converging potential. It clumps gravitationally because it carries energy and affects space-time, but it doesn't form particles that interact with light or normal matter.
So that would explain why we can't directly detect dark matter particles if it's not particles at all in the traditional sense.
That's the claim. It explains the gravitational effects without needing exotic, non-interacting particles.
And the third temporal boson.
The instant
boson. This one mediates interactions at the instant. It's the field governing wave function collapse, making the choice between possibilities. It's also linked to non-local quantum effects like entanglement. And KUT proposes it's the carrier field for consciousness itself, connecting individual points of awareness. Wow. Okay, so dark energy is the push of the past, dark matter is the pull of the future, and the instant mediates the present. And this all has to be tied together by conservation laws. You mentioned a cosmic ledger.
Exactly. Noether's theorem is fundamental in physics. Symmetries imply conserved quantities. The U+D6 symmetry here is complex, and KUT shows it requires a conserved tensor current of rank 3. They call it the Noellian tensor. No.
Rank 3. Why is that important? Usually currents are vectors, rank 1, or tensors like the stress energy tensor, rank 2.
The third index is key. It specifically labels which type of temporal flow is involved, past, instant, or future. So TMUN isn't just tracking energy and momentum in space-time, it's tracking the flow between the temporal realms. It literally logs the source of influence.
So components of this tensor source the different fields.
Precisely. Source is the control boson, dark energy. Source is the chaos boson, dark matter. And the source is the instant boson, consciousness collapse. And the whole thing obeys a strict conservation law. Nablamu no. Nothing is lost. Every interaction, every choice, every bit of energy flow is accounted for in this ledger.
Okay, we had this dynamic interplay of time and forces all meticulously tracked. But this brings up a big question. Stability. If reality is this constant push and pull, this breathing between order and chaos, how do we get stable physical laws? How does the universe remember how to be itself? Standard physics kind of struggles with this, right? The great forgetting idea.
It does. Standard models don't really have a mechanism for long-term memory beyond the current state of particles and fields. This leads to issues like the fine-tuning problem. Why are the constants of nature so perfectly set for life? KUT introduces a specific mechanism for this, the Noellian Resonant Attractor Manifold, or CRAM.
CRAM. So this is the universe's hard drive you hinted at earlier.
Kind of, but much more active than a hard drive. Think of it as a real, physical, higher dimensional geometric structure, a manifold, that serves as the substrate for universal memory. It's where the universe literally learns from its own history.
Learns how? How does information get imprinted onto this camera?
Through the instant, $T, this involves two more core axioms. Axiom 3 is persistent imprint. It states that every single act of becoming, every quantum collapse, every conscious choice, every interaction mediated by that instant boson mu leaves a permanent mark, a geometric distortion, on the camera.
So the past isn't just gone, it physically shapes this manifold.
Exactly. Mathematically, the metric of the Carom, G$, is defined by the time-integrated history of the instant component of that Noellian tensor, Timura. History literally warps the geometry of this memory space.
Okay, so it's an archive. But you said it was active.
Yes, that's Axiom 4, dynamic guidance. The Carom isn't just passively storing information. Its geometry actively guides subsequent evolution. The flow of energy and information in the universe described by that Noellian tensor tends to follow the paths of least resistance, the geometric grooves and valleys etched into the Carom by past events. It functions as a phase space attractor.
Guiding evolution. How is that modeled? Is there an equation for how Carom behaves?
Yes, the evolution of the Carom itself is governed by a specific type of partial differential equation, or PDE. The paper identifies it as being in the class of driven, damped Allen-Cahn or Ginzburg-Landau equations.
Why that type of equation specifically? What does it capture?
Those equations are known for modeling phase separation, pattern formation, and importantly, coarsening. The damping term in the Carom equation represents a tendency to smooth out noise, to erase transient, unstable patterns. The driving term, coupled to the ongoing control-chaos exchange from the temporal fields, keeps it dynamic. It allows the Carom to settle into stable, self-reinforcing geometric patterns, the attractors, while filtering out the random fluctuations. It's a mathematical model of learning through selection.
And this learning, this filtering, this connects directly to the fine-tuning problem. Mm-hmm. Why our constants are what they are.
Precisely. KUA proposes hypothesis 3.3, cosmic cycle filtering. Imagine the universe goes through cycles, perhaps ending in something like a big crunch or a similar reset. During this collapse phase, the Carom undergoes what physicists call a renormalization group, RG flow.
RG flow. That's usually about how physics changes at different energy scales.
Right. But here it's applied to the memory manifold over cosmic time. The RG flow effectively averages out the noise, the random events, the unstable configurations from the previous cycle. Only the most robust, self-consistent, frequently occurring patterns survive this filtering process. These stable endpoints, the fixed points of the RG flow on the Carom, those are the fundamental constants and laws we observe.
So the constants aren't arbitrary numbers plugged in at the beginning. They are the results of cosmic evolution learning stability.
Exactly. They are statistical inevitabilities, the geometric structures that proved most resilient over countless iterations stored in the Carom. The universe didn't choose them. It converged on them.
Now, you mentioned geometry. If Carom holds the memory of this U666 structure, does it have a specific geometric shape or signature we could potentially detect?
Yes. Representing that six-fold symmetry in an optimal way on the manifold leads, according to KUT's mathematical derivation, to a very specific geometric structure. It requires a minimum dimension of D66 sus for the embedding space, and the projection down to observable patterns naturally favors hexagonal symmetry. But the dynamics require efficient packing and information flow leading to the Chiro Q lattice.
Chiro Q lattice, what is that?
It's a specific type of pentagonal tiling, a quasi-periodic pattern made of interlocking pentagons. KUT predicts, prediction 6.1, that this specific five-fold symmetric tiling is the fundamental geometric pixel of the Carom, the most efficient way to store and process information in this U966 context.
Wow. And this has implications beyond physics, connecting to ideas like morphic resonance.
It does. KUT offers a physical basis for Rupert Sheldrake's idea. Theorem 3.5 basically says morphic fields aren't some mystical energy, but are localized regions of high coherence, deep valleys within the actual physical geometry of the Carom.
So when a system learns something, a bird flock maneuvering, a crystal forming, maybe even an idea spreading.
It's literally following a pre-existing geometric pathway in the Carom, made deeper by previous successes. This makes it easier statistically for subsequent systems to fall into that same successful pattern. The universe remembers successful forms and makes them more probable.
Okay, we have the structure, ternary time, edgy field, the memory, Carom. What about the engine? What actually drives the constant change in evolution? This brings us to Noellian ontological tridynamics, or KOT. Sounds philosophical again.
It has philosophical roots, definitely drawing from Hegelian dialectics, but KOT aims to formalize it as physics. KOT describes the dynamic interaction between the three temporal realms, treating them as fundamental fields.
So thesis, antithesis, synthesis.
Pretty much. One, control, that's the thesis, represents order, the influence of the past, determinacy. Hmm. Chaos, the antithesis, represents dissipation, the pull of the future, pure novelty. Three, consciousness, the synthesis, the mediating field operating in the instant, responsible for actualization.
And how do these fields interact? There must be an equation governing their evolution.
There is. The evolution is described by a vector equation involving a triadic operator. Hmm. But the absolutely crucial part is the interaction term in the system's Lagrangian, the equation that defines the dynamics. KUT posits a nonlinear cubic interaction term, lambda fixal.
Lambda times control, times chaos, times consciousness. Why cubic? Why that specific combination?
That cubic term is the mathematical engine of synthesis. It means that control and chaos cannot interact without involving or producing consciousness. You need all three. Lambda is like the fundamental coupling constant for all creative or generative acts in the universe. It mandates that order and novelty must always interact through the mediating now of conscious actualization.
And this interaction prevents the universe from just stopping or falling apart.
Exactly. KOT demonstrates the universe is inherently homeodynamic, meaning it constantly seeks balance but never settles into a static state. Because of that cubic term, if one field starts to dominate, the interaction automatically boosts the others. Well, say the universe becomes too ordered, too deterministic, too much fast. The large fast value in the lambda fast fast term forces a stronger interaction, which inherently generates more effect fixed viscous nullity and effect consciousness actualization to balance it out. It prevents a heat death of pure order.
And if chaos takes over?
If expects too high, the interaction term works the other way, using the chaos to precipitate new structures, boosting fix of ekath. It prevents dissolution into formless potential. The universe is mathematically required to keep breathing between order and novelty.
That breathing, can we see it mathematically? Does it show up in the equations?
Yes. Through what's called an eigenmode analysis of the KOT system. Theorem 4.2, the cosmic breath, looks at the natural modes of vibration or evolution of this coupled three-field system.
And what does the analysis find?
It finds three fundamental modes represented by eigenvalues. One eigenvalue is zero, lambda dollars. This corresponds to the conserved mode, the stable, unchanging part, which KUT identifies with the total memory stored in the KRAM.
Okay, one stable mode. What about the others?
The other two eigenvalues, lambda pim, are imaginary conjugates. This is the really exciting part.
Imaginary eigenvalues.
Yeah.
In dynamics, that usually means oscillation, right? Things going back and forth without dying out.
Precisely. It's the mathematical signature of sustained non-dissipative oscillation. It mandates that the universe must perpetually oscillate, exchange energy between control and chaos, mediated by the instant. It breathes. And this oscillation has a characteristic frequency, omega, determined by the fundamental constants of the theory, like that coupling lambda.
A fundamental frequency for the universe's breath. And you mentioned scale invariance earlier. KUT claims this frequency, this dynamic, is the same everywhere.
That's hypothesis 4.4. It's a huge claim. KOT suggests this triadic dynamic, Leven, left, right, harrow, fix, left, right, harrow, phi, is fractal, operating self-similarly across all scales of reality.
Like where?
Well, on the grandest scale, cosmology. The outward push of dark energy control, balanced by the inward pull of dark matter, chaos, leading to the formation of galaxies and structure synthesis.
Go down to biology. The inherited genetic code, control, interacting with environmental pressures and random mutations, chaos, leading to adaptation and evolution via natural selection, synthesis.
Exactly.
Even in cognition. Established memories and beliefs, control, encountering new information or unconscious thoughts, chaos, resulting in conscious understanding or insight, synthesis.
And the frequency. Should we see that specific frequency signature at different scales?
KUT predicts yes. This characteristic frequency omega might show up in the large-scale structure patterns, maybe related to the peaks in the CMB power spectrum, but also potentially in the microscale, like the specific frequencies of brain waves, perhaps the gamma waves associated with high coherence and consciousness. The universe humming one fundamental tune, driven by this KOT dynamic.
This is all incredibly grand and unified. But the crucial thing about any scientific theory, especially one this ambitious, is testability. Can we actually check if KUT is right or wrong? Does it make concrete predictions? It absolutely does. And this is arguably one of its biggest strengths compared to some other high-level theoretical frameworks. KUT is deliberately designed to be falsifiable, and it makes several specific measurable predictions.
Okay, what's the headline prediction? The big one.
The most immediate and perhaps most dramatic is prediction 6.1. The CMB Cairo Q lattice signature. Remember the CRAM, the memory manifold. KUT predicts its fundamental geometry. It's that chiropentagonal tiling.
Right.
Well, if the CRAM guides structure formation and thermalization, even in the early universe, then that specific geometric pattern should be subtly imprinted onto the cosmic microwave background radiation, the afterglow of the Big Bang, specifically in the non-Gaussian features, the slight deviations from perfect randomness.
So we need to look for pentagons in the sky. How on earth do you do that?
Not literally pentagons, but the topological signature of that tiling. It requires some pretty advanced data analysis. You'd use techniques called topological data analysis, TDA, on the high-resolution maps of the CMB, like the ones from the Planck satellite. TDA is designed to find underlying shapes and connectivity patterns in complex data.
What specific pattern are they looking for?
The key signature of the Cairo tiling is a specific arrangement of connection points, or vertices. Some vertices connect to three edges, others connect to four, in a distinct alternating pattern. TDA algorithms would search the CMB data for statistically significant evidence of the specific three-valent, four-valent NERD structure.
And the falsification is clear.
Crystal clear. If detailed TDA analysis of the Planck data shows the non-Gaussianities are just random noise, or if they reveal a different geometric structure, say purely hexagonal patterns or something else entirely, then this core prediction fails and KUT, at least in this form, is falsified. The geometry has to match.
Okay, that's a big one. What else? You mentioned it drives fundamental constants, like the fine structure constant alpha.
Yes, prediction 6.3. Alpha, which governs the strength of electromagnetism, is about 1137. It's one of the most precisely measured constants in physics, but standard theory just takes it as a given. KUT claims alpha isn't fundamental, but emerges from the geometry of the KUT vacuum.
How?
It proposes alpha is a ratio of two characteristic lengths within the KUT framework. Alpha sigma I lambda CQL. Here, sigma I is related to the fundamental size or interaction cross-section of particles, which KUT models topologically, possibly like tiny torus knots. Lambda CQL is the fundamental size scale of a unit cell in that Cairo Q lattice structure of the vacuum's memory, KM.
So alpha is basically the ratio of particle size to vacuum texture size.
That's the idea. The value of proc 1137.0366 emerges because the universe settles into a resonant state where the particle geometry and the vacuum geometry fit together optimally, maximizing stability. The paper suggests their initial calculations are promising but need more refinement. Still, deriving a fundamental constant from geometry is a huge test.
And the third prediction brings it right down to us, neural topology, connecting the cosmic memory to the brain.
Right. Prediction 6.4, neural topology. The idea follows from morphic resonance and scale invariance. If the brain is mediating control, memory, and chaos potential through the instant, $T, it should naturally adopt the most efficient geometry for this process, which, according to KUT, is the Cairo Q lattice geometry stored in the CRAM.
So our brain should show this pattern. When?
KUT predicts that during states of high cognitive coherence, deep meditation, peak flow states, moments of insight, the functional connectivity network of the brain should transiently exhibit patterns resembling the Cairo Q lattice.
How would you even measure that?
You'd need high-density brain scanning, like EEG or MEG, and then apply sophisticated graph theory analysis to the data. You'd look for those characteristic alternating three-valent and four-valent nodes popping up in the network map during those specific high-coherence moments. If brain activity in these states is just globally synchronized noise or shows a different pattern, this prediction fails. It's testing if our brains tap into a universal geometric language for processing information.
Beyond these specific predictions, do they do any computational validation? Simulations.
Yes, the paper reports on simulations related to the CMB. They modeled the CARAM evolution using that Allen Ken Ginsberg Landau type PDE, driven by the energy exchange between the control and chaos fields.
And what did they find?
They found that this system, representing the ongoing thermal dynamics of the KUT universe filtered through its memory, could naturally produce features in the simulated energy spectrum, the Liddell spectrum, that look remarkably like the acoustic peaks we actually observe in the real CMB power spectrum.
Wait, so the CMB peaks might not be from sound waves in the early universe plasma?
That's the implication of their theorem 5.1. They argue the CMB spectrum isn't just a snapshot from 380,000 years after the Big Bang. Instead, it's an ongoing thermalization signature. It's the result of the continuous push-pull between control and chaos, constantly being generated and filtered by the Carium, happening right now in the universal instant. It suggests the CMB is a dynamic equilibrium signature, not just a fossil.
Okay, let's dig into those bigger cosmological shifts. If KUT is right, it completely reframes dark energy and dark matter. How does it solve the problems associated with them, like why dark energy is so constant and why its density is comparable to dark matter's now?
Hypothesis 7.1 tackles dark energy. Remember the control field mediating the outward push from the past. KUT identifies this field's large-scale effect as dark energy. Because it's constantly drawing on the source, Ultimaton, it acts like a uniform, persistent pressure throughout space.
Which naturally gives it that constant energy density and the equation of state dollar approx, nanj to 1 that astronomers observe.
Exactly. It solves the cosmological constant problem because its value isn't some arbitrary vacuum energy, but is set by the fundamental coupling strength of the KOT dynamics. It's a required feature of the system's balance.
And dark matter, the chaos field.
Hypothesis 7.2 identifies dark matter as the gravitational effect of this inward pulling chaos field. Because AMI was modeled as a non-local wave of potential energy converging from the future, entropium, it exerts gravity, clumps on large scales, holds galaxies together, but it doesn't form localized particles that interact electromagnetically.
Which again explains the null results from direct detection experiments looking for WIMPs or axions.
That's the claim. It's gravity without particles in the usual sense.
But what about the ratio? Why is there roughly 27% dark matter and 68% dark energy now? The coincidence problem?
KUT explains this via the KOT dynamics. Remember, the system is homeodynamic, always seeking balance. If you look for the steady state solution of the KOT equations, where the overall balance between control, chaos, and instant is maintained over time, the maths dictates a specific ratio between the energy densities of the control field, approxic dark energy, and the chaos field, approxic dark matter.
The ratio isn't accidental.
No, it falls out of the equations needed to maintain the perpetual oscillation, the cosmic breath. The observed ratio of omega dm.444 is predicted as a consequence of the fundamental KOT coupling constants, ensuring the universe doesn't collapse or fly apart. It solves the coincidence problem by making the current ratio a dynamic necessity, not a coincidence of timing.
This also changes the origin story, the Big Bang. KUT sees it differently.
Radically different. Hypothesis 7.4 proposes continuous genesis. The Big Bang wasn't a single event 13.8 billion years ago. It's happening continuously everywhere in the instant. The instant is the interface where the outward control flow meets the inward chaos flow. KUT argues that new space-time is perpetually being generated at this interface. There's no initial singularity because there's no single beginning point. The universe is always becoming.
Which would also solve the horizon problem without needing cosmic inflation.
Yes, because the instant is fundamentally non-local and simultaneous across the universe. It ensures causal connection, allowing distant regions to reach thermal equilibrium naturally without needing an early period of superluminal expansion. The age of the universe, in this view, is more like the depth of memory accumulated in the Carium, not time elapsed since a singular explosion.
Let's pivot to consciousness. This is often seen as the hard problem. How does KUT address it?
By dissolving it, essentially. KUT argues, reframing 8.1, that consciousness isn't something that mysteriously emerges from complex matter. It's fundamental. The instant itself is intrinsically experiential. The synthesis field, mediated by the instant boson Nemoore, is consciousness.
So the brain doesn't create consciousness.
The brain is more like a sophisticated receiver, organizer, and amplifier. Structures like microtubules, KOT suggests, echoing theories like ORCH-OR, might act as antenna, resonating with the universal instant field DALL-MU, allowing the physical system to tap into and structure that fundamental conscious awareness. It integrates countless quantum events happening in the instant into a coherent subjective flow.
This seems to lead naturally into the question of free will. If the past is deterministic control and the future is potential chaos, where does choice fit in?
This is hypothesis 8.3, the shimmer of choice. KUT offers a compatibilist picture. Yes, the large-scale flows of control and chaos exert strong deterministic and probabilistic pressures, but the instant is where the synthesis happens.
And conscious systems can influence that synthesis.
Subtly, yes. A sufficiently complex system, one with significant coherence and memory stored via its connection to CRAM, can slightly bias the outcome of the quantum collapses happening within it at $2. It's not about violating physical laws, but about selecting which of the many allowed possible outcomes actually manifests. Consciousness can nudge the system down one path versus another within the rules.
And that choice isn't random noise. It's a real influence.
Yes. And crucially, that choice then gets imprinted back onto the CRAM via Axiom 3, influencing future probabilities. It's genuine participation in the unfolding reality.
So pulling all these threads together, the Noellian worldview is painting a very different picture of the cosmos than the standard one.
Vastly different. It's not a cold, dead, random machine grinding along. The KUT universe is presented as fundamentally a living process, this perpetual cycle of becoming, driven by the KUT dynamics. Its participatory consciousness isn't a spectator. It's integral to the process of actualization and memory formation. And perhaps most radically, it's meaningful.
Meaningful how?
The name itself, Noellian, hints at it. The entire process, the filtering via CRAM, the synthesis in the instant, it's framed as a universe striving to know itself well. A perpetual act of self-discovery and self-synthesis, where the infinite potential Apeiron explores and understands itself through the experiences of finite structures within the projection, Eidolon. Hashtag tag outro.
We have certainly gone deep today navigating the intricate structure of the Noellian universe theory, from ternary time and the six force carriers through the cosmic memory of CRAM and the dynamic engine of KOT. It's a staggering synthesis.
It really is. It attempts to weave together cosmology, the foundations of quantum mechanics, the nature of consciousness, even concepts like memory and purpose, into a single mathematical and conceptual framework, offering potential mechanisms for dark energy, dark matter, fine-tuning, quantum collapse. It's breathtakingly ambitious.
And as you emphasize, its strength lies not just in its scope, but in its testability. It makes concrete, falsifiable predictions.
Absolutely. Now, to be clear, there's still a huge amount of work needed. Proving the full mathematical consistency, like the renormalizability of the U66 to gauge theory, developing much more detailed 3D simulations, that's likely decades of work.
But the core predictions, especially the geometric ones, are on the table now.
Yes. The framework is developed enough, they argue, to justify immediate empirical investigation, particularly that highest stakes test.
The search for the Chiro-Q lattice signature. Prediction 6.1, in the existing Planck CMB data, using topological data analysis.
Exactly. If that specific pentagonal tiling geometry is found, confirming the CRAM structure, well, that changes everything. It would be a monumental validation of this whole approach.
The very existence of this theory, co-authored by a human with a profound vision and advanced AI partners handling the formalization, feels like it might signal a new way of doing fundamental science.
It certainly pushes boundaries. It insists we treat questions about cosmic memory, purpose, and consciousness not just as philosophy, but as potentially solvable problems in geometry, topology, and field theory. The data might hold the answers.
Which brings us to a final thought, something for you, the listener, to mull over, drawing directly from this Noellian framework. KUT posits that every conscious choice, every moment of synthesis happening in the instant, leaves a permanent geometric imprint on the CRAM, the universe's memory. This imprint then subtly guides the future flow of reality. If that's true, if your decisions aren't just fleeting moments, but are actively woven into the fabric of cosmic memory, contributing to this universal process of knowing itself well, how does that change the way you think about your own actions, your intentions, your participation in the world? What kind of pattern, what geometric groove are you etching into the universe today?